Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host straight from Dancing with the Stars, Andy Smerick.
Hey, Mike, what's up?
Not too much. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Always nice to fill in for Rick when he can't make it.
Yeah. You've been traveling a lot lately, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Was out in San Francisco for the wonderful Education Writers Association thing.
So I got to know, what was the ratio of reporters to PR people and pundits? More PR people and pundits than reporters?
There were a lot of pundits, but actually, interestingly, my session was, a Saturday morning at 9 a.m., so I kind of assumed there'd be no writers there at all because, they like to sleep in late. But no, it was pretty crowded. Almost all, random people from...
Was that just a slur on the journalistic profession?
No, I bet if you were to look at reporters, their day starts later and ends later than most people.
At least that's my experience.
Okay. But it was a Saturday morning. But no, there were lots of writers. Got to meet a lot of people in person that I've only read bylines from.
Oh, very exciting.
It was a good time.
Of course, keep in mind, this was on the West Coast. And so for all the East Coast reporters, it was more like noon.
That's true.
Yeah. So you don't have to, it doesn't have to change your whole view of the journalism profession if you don't want to.
But it was kind of funny. So Justin Cohen and I had to debate turnarounds again, mm-hmm. and it's a bit like the 10th time he and I have done it. It's like we're professional wrestlers, we're friends, but then we travel all around the country arguing with one another in front of an audience,
nice.
And then we go and have dinner together.
So I'm curious, have either of you changed your positions as a result of these?
No, actually, I think what's happened is our arguments have gotten better, that we are better debaters with one another, and we presuppose everyone's other's arguments, but no.
Can I make a proposal that the EdWeek Bridging Differences blog, they need to get rid of Diane and Debbie since they agree with everything now, and they should have Andy and Justin.
Yeah, well,
true differences.
Would be a one-trick pony. It'd be all about turnarounds.
Okay, all right. Well, we're talking about turnarounds. Let's turn this baby around.
By the way, I'm doing the editing this week, so we're going to do very minimal outtakes.
Understand. Yes,
worst
Laura,
segue
producer
ever.
Laura, is on vacation, so God help us all.
3 minutes in.
You're going to all, listeners are going to say, wow, it just seems like they're dragging on more than usual.
What's up, Mickey?
That's why. Okay.
Hey.
Let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Mickey, get us started.
Okay. In the past week, there have been articles, at least in the Associated Press, Wall Street Journal, and New York Times, all making the same basic point that too many kids are going to college. They note the scholar Richard Vedder at Ohio University, who's kind of done the most prominent research on this, that the idea of degree inflation, that the value of a college degree is getting less and less, and it's being used in jobs that no longer require it, and that there are also lots of people who are being pushed to go to college who may not be academically ready for success. So what do you make of this? Is this a real problem?
Well, there are a few different issues wrapped up in this. So the degree inflation can be debated on itself. It might be the case that because there are more people in college, and if some of them are less qualified, then a degree means less because it's been watered down. So you can debate that on its side. But there are these other issues about how many kids actually are qualified to go to school, what jobs actually need these types of degrees. But this the final kind of case that there are... there aren't enough jobs out there that require a degree for the amount of people who are getting degrees is the least compelling to me, that it seems like we should just worry about the supply of this, get as many educated people, because that's a value in and of itself. And then I just have a vision that, that takes care of itself, that jobs will come up or they create them on their own and so forth. So I don't lose any sleep about this.
Do you think it's unfair at all to the kids, who are graduating, who are statistically just unlikely to find jobs, or they're just jobs not out there, who've been promised that this is the pathway to a career?
I think that this is in some ways a straw man, and that there's a lot of rhetoric about getting all kids college ready, or many more kids graduating from college, and I do agree that that might not be a smart policy, but we're nowhere near actually making that happen,
right?
So I don't think we're at anywhere near the point right now where on an annual basis we are actually graduating too many kids from college. It's possible that we could reach that point in the future, and that we would be smart to focus on other policies that might be more about getting kids training that's going to help them get to high paid jobs right out of high school or right out of a year or two of certificate training. But it's not like we're sure there are some unemployed college graduates right now, but that's a short-term thing with the recession.
Do you know off the top of your head what the percentage of, say, 25 or 30-year-olds who actually have a college degree in America is? It's not like 90%. We're talking more like 50% or less, isn't it?
25 or 30% of all adults have a college degree.
Yeah, so the idea
certainly that higher for 25-year-olds.
But we don't have a glut. It's not like 90% of Americans right. have degrees. And
right. I don't think this is our biggest problem, but I think Richard Vedder makes a good point, which is that it would be foolish for us to try to get all kids to go to college. That's probably not good for them or for the country. Next question.
All right. Just this week, Central Falls High School in Rhode Island came to a tentative agreement with their union, in which the union apparently conceded more than they had been asked to. At least Rick Hess on his blog today and yesterday was very positive about the outcome of this. He said it's an example of the management stepping up and being tough negotiators and actually getting a lot in return. Are you guys as positive about what happened in Central Falls?
Well, I actually just about an hour ago got my hands on the agreement, and it's good. It didn't blow me away, though. So I actually took the state and the school and the district at their word. I actually believed that they thought that the teachers were part of the problem. Rick makes the case that that was more of a bargaining ploy, that they wanted to fire the teachers as a signal so they can go back to the tables and negotiate. So they got a bunch of the negotiated items that they wanted, like longer school day, having teachers come before or after school to do tutoring and so forth. And all that stuff is great, but it leaves open the question, are those teachers in that school in question the right ones to educate those kids? And almost all of them are getting their jobs back. So I don't know enough about those teachers, but I mean, if we believe the teacher quality matters and you threaten to fire teachers because they're not good enough or not up to the job, and then you back away, raises questions.
Well, first of all, I got to wonder what the atmosphere is going to be like this fall when all these disgruntled teachers are teaching at this school. I mean, I would think that this whole episode has poisoned the environment, so I still feel bad for the kids at Central Falls High School. Mm-hmm. This was an important proxy war. You know, what the district was saying, and I think what Deborah Gist, the Rhode Island commissioner, was saying, is we are not going to let the teacher unions have veto power over school reform. And if you're talking about a school that's been chronically failing, and the administration wants to put in some bold steps, the union doesn't get to say no out of hand. And so I think that was an important
Good
principle
point.
To establish. And it might give some inspiration to other schools to be tough-minded going forward.
But you got to answer this, though. Do you think, what do you think is more likely to lead to big improvements in the school's quality, getting a brand new teaching staff or using the same teaching staff and having a 30-minute longer day?
Right. No, I think that if this is a truly failing school, then there's an argument for a brand new teaching staff. Some of the reporting that came out about the school said, you know what, they actually were making some improvements.
Okay.
And so you've got to believe there are, you know, plenty of good teachers on that staff. And
you would think.
So we'll find out. Okay, Mickey, topic number three.
All right. I've heard a little bit of chatter today about the round two of the Race to the Top and the possibility that if the applicants aren't good enough, that Secretary Duncan will actually hand out only enough money to those applicants who are truly qualified and take the rest of his pot of money and return it faithfully back to the Treasury.
You doubt that.
Is there any chance that this will actually happen?
There is a chance. There's also a chance that I'm going to be on American Idol next season. I could do a few songs for our listeners.
You already have many times.
I think it's important. It's good rhetoric. I'm glad that the secretary is saying this. He's saying, look, we're going to have a high bar. You can't win the race to the top just by waiting it out or just kind of by making it to the finish line. Mm-hmm. And there are some states out there, including Ohio, that seem to have that strategy, that say, look, you know, we placed pretty well last time, and if we can just do as well this time, we'll get the money. And so we don't need to go for any more bold reforms. I certainly think that the secretary is trying to say, look, if you want this money, you really got to go for it. We want to see some real effort. At the end of the day, are they going to give money back to the Treasury? No way and you know where.
So I would like to think that that is an option that they're considering using. So in the first round, I think there were 7 serious applications. There might be more this time, but they're talking about, say, funding an additional 12. There certainly weren't 12 in addition to Delaware and Tennessee that were qualified, so they may have to use a nuclear option. Whether they have the courage to do that, I don't know. But, I mean, Mike's point is the one I'm most interested in. There were a bunch of finalist states who were told, because they were finalists, I mean, in effect, that they were almost there, like Ohio, like Pennsylvania, like North Carolina, like South Carolina. And their applications weren't all that good, and these states aren't doing anything new since round one to improve their applications or pass a big legislation. So they're going to be marginally better, if at all, and then Duncan's going to actually have to make a call. Is okay or good enough?
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. A nicely played game of pardon the gadfly.
Good job, Mickey.
All right, but now our listeners have been waiting through all of this stuff so they can hear what they're really after.
That's right.
Amber's Research Minute.
All right, how are you doing, fellas?
Great to see you, Amber.
How are you, Amber?
Too. Doing great.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what do you got for us?
I have, and this is, it's really exciting, actually. It's a new NBER study conducted by Cornell labor economist Caribou Jackson.
Hmm.
Interesting stuff. Here we go. It finds that the right match between teacher and school is just as important in determining student achievement as is overall teacher quality. The match effect is basically anything that makes a teacher more productive at one school than another, beyond mean differences in productivity across schools, so we know that. So these are things, just to put it in context, like Mrs. Smith is better teaching low-income students versus affluent students, or she's better in schools that use direct instruction versus inquiry learning, or schools that have a certain work culture, etc. So researchers examine link student, teacher, and school-level data in North Carolina from 1995 to 2006, so a nice amount of time, to determine whether teacher effectiveness changes depending on the school environment. So they had some surveys of work conditions that the teachers had also filled out. This is difficult research to tackle, and Caribou takes, is it Caribou? Caribou. I always don't know how to pronounce his name. Anyway, he's a bigwig. He takes care to control for teachers simply moving to better schools, which is obviously the big threat here, as well as a host of other variables. He finds that about a quarter of what one might assume is a teacher quality effect is in fact a match effect that can change depending on a teacher's school. He finds, too, that teachers tend to be more effective in math after they move schools, but there's no difference when it comes to reading. With so much debate around which schools do and don't get the most effective teachers, this research begs the next question. Which teacher-school pairings are most conducive to raising student achievement?
Oh, what a great study.
Isn't that a neat study?
And it couldn't be more timely.
Yeah. Timely. A neat study.
Well, yep. Tell us why, Andy. Why do you think
so? A big chunk of the race at the top and a big chunk of the theory of action right now behind schools is that we have an unequal distribution of high-quality teachers. And an underlying assumption here is that if Mrs. Jones is a great teacher, say she's teaching out in the leafy suburbs and she's getting a year and a half worth of student advancement per student per year, we just assume that if you put her in any other school, she would do just as well. And this is arguing maybe that's not the case.
That's
maybe
right.
Mrs. Johnson is great in leafy suburbs, Kennedy Elementary, but she's not so good at King Elementary.
Inner city school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, and plus, there's been all this focus on teachers lately, and there's almost been some discussion like, you know, maybe schools don't matter anymore,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
With the focus for so many years has been school as the organization we're trying to change. But then we find out that teachers vary dramatically from classroom to classroom. So maybe schools, well, it turns out that schools do matter. I mean, the context the teacher is teaching in still does matter.
Yeah, and what I thought was kind of sad and amusing was that he made such a big point that wage and productivity are virtually unrelated in teaching, unlike so many other professions.
Right.
So it's actually a really neat field to do a study like this, since there's, you know, basically it's not about wages in teaching. So the mobility is not about wages as much. So
anyway,
it was interesting.
Amber, I want to ask one quick question.
Yes.
Who tipped you off to this study?
That would be you.
Thank you.
Mr. VP,
thank
Mike
you.
Petrelli.
Thank you. I just want you to, there's a now string of NBER papers I've turned you on
yes,
to.
Yes, I know, and I cannot. You get it from your Google Reader. I cannot. I cannot.
All
get
right,
my
I read about it on Steve Sawchuck's blog, so that's all fair. Sawchuck, baby, out to you.
But still, there's a line of communication.
I see those
here.
Letters NBER,
and
you
know,
I light up.
It's got to be it. That's right. The place does some amazing research. He's a top economist.
So this is probably a stupid question, but do you think that traditional teacher colleges preparation programs are thinking about this issue and saying, wow, we know so much about this teacher,
yeah,
let's make sure we place him or her?
I would highly, highly, highly doubt it. And our upcoming Different Drummers study is probably going to shed some light on that. It shows that they're not as forward-thinking as we might like.
What about TFA or some of these other?
Hold on, Andy. But think about this. I mean, I don't know that this study would tell them. Like, how would you figure out which teacher is going to be more effective?
Well,
wouldn't you
hope that teacher colleges would read the study and be like, yeah, we've known this for 20 years. We've been thinking about this and dealing with it.
I was actually thinking they should be conducting research. I mean, I know we always say, oh, we need more research, but clearly, you know, we need some other folks doing this other than labor economists too.
Right.
But to find out how can we predict whether a teacher is going to do better in a core knowledge school versus
right
coalition of essential schools school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know of any preparation program that's doing that.
Exactly. Nor okay. do I.
Food for thought. So, Amber, thought. What's the music for thought?
So, since we're talking about the best match between teacher and school, we have the ever-popular Taylor Swift song, You Belong With Me.
So, Mike, I know you read the Gadfly.
I write the Gadfly.
Not the Gadfly, fly paper. But yes. I actually blogged using an allusion to Taylor Swift yesterday. So all of our readers ought to check that out. It's about an Atlantic article that I read that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little.
You just think you're so fun.
I love Taylor Swift. Big fan of hers. Yeah. I'm kidding.
She sounds like that. Oh.
Yeah, that's right, it's my turn.
Part-time producer Stafford has decided
yeah,
to
really?
Talk about Taylor Swift.
Wow, someone's
little
jealous.
Little energy there, I can tell.
All right, research assistant Janie is here with Rate That Reform. What you got for us today?
I got some good stuff.
Cool.
So a math teacher in Jefferson County, Alabama, recently decided that he was going to spice up a mundane lesson on geometric lines and angles. He really wanted to make the lesson interesting, to bring it to life for his kids so that they could really engage with the lesson and really understand the principles of geometry on a spatial level.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately, his real-life example turned out to be a bit of a poor lapse in judgment. He basically set up a geometric problem in which he asked where one might need to stand in order to have a direct shot at assassinating President Obama.
Oh, my God.
An anonymous tipster, presumably a concerned student or parent, immediately reported him to the authorities. The Secret Service stepped in and investigated the incident, but have since stated that they deem the teacher to be of no threat, and they have closed their investigation.
Ugh.
So, this teacher is clearly in some serious need of professional development. It seems pretty obvious to me.
Or professional counseling.
Yeah,
perhaps.
You know, just some help in general. It seems pretty obvious to me that a teacher or a student or anyone else, for that matter, should just never take lightly the hypothetical assassination of the president, even when it is just a simple illustrative geometry problem. First of all, it's morally repugnant. And second of all, it's like joking about hijacking a plane when you're going through airport security. You just don't do it. So, in my opinion, it's pretty clear that the teacher's lesson was not okay. But, on some level, you do have to give him credit for trying to make his lesson interesting for the students. Clearly, clearly he was trying to make an effort, however misguided, to keep his students' attention and bring geometry problems out of the textbook and into the real world. I mean, he's clearly not reading from, you know, a scripted lesson here. And at the end of the day, those are the lessons that really stick with students. So, you know, even though he fails miserably with his implementation, he gets a slight bonus point for at least making an effort, so I give him a D-.
So did this teacher get fired?
No.
That's appalling.
I think it was the superintendent from the article said that, you know, they were going to sit down and have a stern lecture, but that he would not lose his job.
Yeah, I mean, even joking around about that's edgy. I mean,
yeah.
Ugh.
Is Alabama one of those states where you can bring a gun to school if you're a teacher?
Oh.
I don't know.
Is that just Texas?
Man, where did you find this article? Is this recent news?
Yeah, it is recent. It was from today or yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. I tell you, I thought it was going to really be funny, but that was kind of a thing I didn't see coming.
Yeah, kind of dark.
No, it's not funny, but it does. I guess it just kind of reminds me of lessons in my past that have really stuck with me. And the one that I thought of that was, you know, kind of not PC at the time was that in high school, what my AP physics teacher, he was teaching us about convex mirrors, and he took us outside and had us light his cigarette with a convex mirror. Or I guess it was a concave mirror, which, you know, was not appropriate at the time. But at the same time, I still remember it, and I remember the lesson. And that's, it was better than sitting in a class and him drawing something on the board or trying to explain it to us. And that's purely what I was trying to get at.
All right, so here's my suggestion for the teacher. Next year, when you're doing this lesson, instead of the whole assassinate the president thing, I think you should use something like, you know, where you have to stand with a super soaker in order to soak
exactly.
the teacher.
Exactly. Poor implementation.
Yes,
but
that would be
at least, you know.
Ugh.
Whew, all right. Well, that's it's always exciting.
Sorry, that was a little downer,
on.
I guess. Andy looks a little shell-shocked over there.
I am. That's awful.
Look, there are 3 million teachers in this country. They are bound to be several thousand on any given day using poor judgment.
I guess that's true.
Okay. But yet, every week. No poor judgment here at the Education Gadfly Show. We're out of time, though. Till next week.
I'm Andy Smerik.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show at edexcellence.net, signing off.